I would trade him if I could.
I don't think many people liked it, to be honest. I don't care.
Last year didn't really do well for anybody.
We should probably delete all of this.
By the laws of the podcast gods, we owe an answer.
Reporting the Highline with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car or in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, February 1st, 2021. Happy Black History Month. Major League Soccer could be heading towards its first ever lockout and work stoppage. The villain of Season 2 of Sunderland Till I Die is officially heading back to England, and the United States men's national team is red, white, and blue, and now has some burgundy in there as well. I'm joined now by a man who's here to call this meeting of the Jonathan Lewis Hive to order, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
What's going on, man? It's fun. Matt is so amped about Jonathan Lewis, and I will come back at him, clap back, if you will, kind of making sure that Sam Vines gets his love. But we'll talk about that when we get there. And Matt is talking about,
Josh Maga. M-A-J-A.
Yes, Maga would be a really bad, bad thing to be talking about right now. You are so all in for Sunderland.
I'm not all in for Sunderland. You didn't see where Josh Maja is going, Mark?
He's going to Fulham.
Yes, he's on loan to Fulham with a 10 million pound option to buy, which TBD, Fulham's fully in a relegation battle, and I'm increasingly looking pessimistic given how the last week's gone, but we'll see.
They've got to go down so Swansea can come up, Matt. That's how it's got to be. Americans coming down, Americans going up. That's how it's got
to
be.
Oh, we can't do that to Anthony Robinson, or Tim Ream for that matter.
Why not? But wind up in MLS. It's a soft landing ground when you play for the Prem and it doesn't quite pan out. You know, MLS is where soccer players come to do their best work, and the back end of the Premiership is a nice retirement home for mediocre Fulham players.
Anthony Robinson, mediocre Fulham players. Are you subtweeting Clint Dempsey there, Mark?
No, I'm just ranting at this point. I mean, I had to sit through a 0-0 Arsenal Manchester United match, which, you know, like I'm sure NBC turned that off, like all the producers and the in-house staff, and were like, you know, they put it on big NBC. It was the 12:30 game. And it ended 0-0, and it was mostly awful. The only things that happened that were interesting were Rashford missed an absolutely simple, easy goal because he decided to dribble it three more times. And Willian missed a total, absolute, wide-open opportunity. And those both happened within 10 minutes of each other. On either side of that was about 35 minutes of total boredom. So, I can only focus on as much soccer as I can. Although today, a colleague of mine, a friend who's a rabbi, in upstate New York and who works even less hard than I do, he was checking to see what television, and streaming options he should get so he could watch the maximum amount of soccer. And I said, let me explain to you how to have a 6+, match day in your ideal sitting. And I don't think he'll watch on Saturday, which means he's going to hardcore binge all of his soccer on Wednesdays and Sundays. So I think you can get in 6 games on a Sunday, maybe only 5. I think you can get in only 6 games max on a Saturday. But Matt, I think you've told me you once got 8 in a row.
Well, I guess, are we counting, like, watching individual game, like, so no overlap between any games, yes?
No, I'm allowing a slight amount of overlap, but I would say that in order to count a game as a game that you watch, you have to watch 45 minutes of it.
45? Okay, yeah. In that case, I've probably had a day, we'll say, overlapping where it would have been MLS, the European options as well. This would have been in a post, ESPN Plus world to where some probably English lower division, maybe Serie A, or, you know, other random games being available there. And it probably would have been like the, maybe a 7 a.m., maybe the 5 a.m. Premier League game. And then finishing off with the European stuff up until noon, maybe three time slots for MLS. If we're counting like a 1 p.m. kickoff, maybe. And then like, that primetime Eastern kickoff, then the usual 7, 8 p.m. here locally. If we're talking Rapids or something on the Pacific time zone. And then something in League MX. I've probably done an 8-game match day on a Saturday a handful of times. But I would say usually a typical Saturday for me, I'd say at this point, you know, we'll say with MLS back in season and the European leagues either just starting or not done yet. So early days MLS, late days MLS. I've probably done regularly a 6-game match day on a Saturday, if we're assuming that Rapids game is not at home and I'm not covering, because then if that happens, then I'm at the stadium and doing press stuff late enough such that I don't get any of the late MLS games or the late League MX game. It would be like a 10 p.m. kickoff here. Nor would I be able to easily watch any of the 7 p.m. Eastern time zone home games, you know, if it was like NYCFC having a home game or New England or something like that. But I guess not. Mark, since we were talking about Maja, I guess I have to talk about MAGA. Mark, where are your space lasers?
My space lasers. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, the Jewish space lasers that I've been
nefariously working on behind the backs of everyone to create all the wildfires.
Yeah, it's a pretty, I have to say, you know, I didn't think that the congresswoman from Georgia would find out about that, but she found us out. I mean, you know, the challenge with the space laser is that there's not too many of them. We only have like 6 or 7, so we have to share. And, you know, as part of the global conspiracy, as Rabbi Goodman is involved in it, I only get the space laser, one Wednesday in June, and my next turn after that doesn't fall till my birthday in November. And it's really, and sometimes I have to pass because it falls on Thanksgiving and yada, yada, yada. You know, it's just really, it's a lot. Now, some people go up to the space laser themselves. Other people just do what I do, which is drone pilot it. But, you know, I was disappointed that this is going to get out now, because now I'm not going to be able to fire off my Jewish space laser, twice a year like I want to.
And Mark, I assume by when you say go up to the space laser, you're of course referring to the Tel Aviv space elevator, yes?
Yeah, but I can't talk about that. That's still a secret, you know, that the elders of Zion, meeting has not declassified yet.
Okay, good to know on that.
But I can check now that you've mentioned it on the podcast. I may bring it up at the next subcommittee meeting of the Tel Aviv elevator and be like, hey, my buddy Matt, who's red haired and not Jewish at all, knows about the secret space elevator.
Okay,
space laser.
I look forward to putting a glass up to the wall and listening through as you guys are having your meeting down at the community center, when next door, of course, the monthly meeting of the Gingers will be taking place with me, Alexi Lawless, and Dax McCarty, of course.
Nice.
As our king of the Ginger is King Alexi. We've got a great show for you that is not peddling in conspiracy theories or making satire of it, folks. But in any case, Mark, let's get to the, I guess, immediate former Rapids news. We've had two former members of the Colorado Rapids land officially, both in the USL Championship and both in the, I guess, the rivalry, the region of the Four Corners states. We have that in the form of former Rapids homegrown and Brighton, Colorado native Dylan Serna landing with the Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC. As Coach Bergtown there will be opening up a new stadium and hoping to get that organization off to a good front. And then New Mexico United, who've been a fantastic addition to the English Championship, have added the patron saint, the first member of the Holding the Highline, All Highline team, Michael Azira. And you've got more Michael Azira stuff to tell us about, Mark.
Kampala Zone. Yeah, Michael Azira. Are you making me share the good news that happened to me?
Put it on Twitter, so we might as well.
I guess. I also put it on Instagram, which is where it really did the business, because Mike's bigger on the Instagram. Mike hit me up a couple months ago and was like, hey, I'm cleaning out closets and getting rid of stuff. Do you want a kit? And I was like, yeah, I do. So he mailed me one in the off season. the Colorado Rapids, the one from the last year that he played. So, it's mad. It's exactly the same as the, so it's like 2017. So it's exactly the same as the kits that we played in when we played in the media game. So now I have three of that kit. Actually, no, I gave one to my dad. But it is signed. It says thank you. And it officially, not officially, he was already the official patron saint of this podcast. By the way, we talk about Mike for a lot of reasons. The main reason is, well, the second reason is probably we'll start with, which is that he was the defensive midfielder, which is, of course, the most important position on a soccer team in the most fun year the Rapids ever had, when the Mastronaccio was in its full bloom in 2016, when the Rapids just could not concede goals at home. Pablo Mastroeni had instituted a steel door defense of a 4-2-3-1. There was no point in a game where there were too many defensive midfielders on the field at a time. There were literally times in the game where Pablo rolled out five defensive midfielders on the field at the same time. You know, there was a point where in like the 80th minute at some point, Nick LaBracca came in as the playmaking attacking midfielder.
Nick LaBracca wasn't on the team at that point, Mark.
But okay, but my point is still stands, which is like, Pablo never met a defensive midfielder. He wouldn't play wherever the hell he wanted to. So I think that was 2015. You're probably right. But anyways, point being, that's reason two that Mike is there. Fantastic player and the best. But reason one is that he is just a hell of a nice guy. I mean, literally one of the kindest people you'll ever meet. Very generous with his time. Kids were always at the stadium. His kids are adorable, you know, and they would run down the mix zone. Such as it is, when he came out of the locker room. So just like, you know, just an absolutely wonderful guy, and he'll be the kind of guy we root for a lifelong. So, and who's our other player who landed somewhere? Did you mention Cerna already?
Yes, Dylan Cerna to the Switchbacks, Mark.
So are you excited about Cerna, Matt? Do you think you can get a signed kit from Cerna, and then we could be like, Bash Bros from 2016 squad?
With all due respect to Dylan Cerna, who was a fantastic servant to the club and put in a lot of really hard efforts, particularly when he was being played out of position or was put into weird situations and asked to do a job and put in a shift for the team to try and help him have success, Mark, I can think of a number of other players I would rather have personally DM me and say, hey, do you want one of my old kits? I'm trying to clean things out, than his. That being said, Mark, I have stood next to Dylan Cerna, and he and I are the same size, so we're talking about a game-worn jersey that would actually work, probably someone of his caliber, as opposed to, I would not anticipate Tim Howard reaching out to me organically and unprompted, Mark, but, you know, we both stood next to Tim Howard, and in his height, in the length of his torso, and I mean, let's be real, like, his biceps and triceps, like that circumference right there is probably that of my thigh. So if we're talking about me putting on a Tim Howard goalkeeper shirt, you know, it'd be like one of those kids putting on like his dad's shirt and then like have like the arms like flank, the arm sock tubes flailing over my arms and it clearly being far too big for me. But, I think this is fun. I think it's a good opportunity for both players, Mark. Obviously, New Mexico United has been a fantastic team, and to have a veteran player who's certainly going to be really excited and able to contribute and do that on and off the field, I think is a good opportunity for Michael. As you were mentioning before we hit the record button, Mark, there might be some complications in terms of the geographic situation given where his family stayed up, but that's something that he dealt with in his time with Chicago Fire FC, as well as he dealt with international border during his time with the Montreal Impact. And obviously for Cerna, though it's, you know, a little further away from Denver, certainly to get back home to Colorado, him and the missus to be back here, be closer, a little bit closer to family. He'll be very familiar with how to get conditioned altitude, and certainly on an interesting project where I think he'd have a good opportunity to snart, and then also be around a number of Rapids homegrowns who are on USL Academy contracts, USL contracts, and loaned down from the Rapids, you know, could provide some perspective in terms of, you know, here's what I did to try and be successful. Here's why things maybe didn't work out for me at the MLS level. Here, I can help you learn from that and be better for it so that you can make it in MLS. So I think a good opportunity for both players. And if we're talking about, Mark, a normal USL season taking place in the Switchbacks' new stadium, I assume that they'll be playing New Mexico United, even if we go with a regional division option. So a good opportunity for me to head down to one of those games, check out the new stadium, get to see Dylan Serna play, and then maybe interview both him and Michael after the match.
That is so exciting. I mean, that's such a fun thing. I was thinking in my head as we were talking about this of the moment that they like get to see each other again, which is, you know, they were on a team together. And I think that that's always a special moment when you kind of reunite years later. I don't know what kind of relationship they had. I mean, I think, you know, Mike was always at a different phase of life, you know, as a married guy with kids. Compared to Dylan, but you know, when you go to battle every day together, you know, you develop a relationship, you develop a friendship. And I think also when you go through some of the challenges that Mike and Dylan both saw when they were with the team, since they were, on a team in 2017 that did not do well, and that went through multiple managers the same year, you know, I think that that'll be, I think that that kind of, forges a bond. Because you can't really rely on being held together by the manager anymore. You're held together by your teammates, which is usually the opposite, you know, in a soccer team, which players come and go, but the manager usually sticks around, I think, longer, ideally, in most teams. So it's an interesting thing. You know, I think the most profound realization I had about, you know, kind of team camaraderie and players was a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago. I was interviewing, I think it was Anthony Velarde, who's a player for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. And I asked him about, you know, kind of playoff soccer and what playoff soccer was like. And I was just kind of like riffing off of like the competitive atmosphere, the seriousness of it. And he said something that I did not expect, which was, yeah, they're really intense because when the game ends, you know, it's probably the last time you'll ever play with these guys again. Now, it's a little different in USL than it is in MLS, where teams hang together, but together a little bit more from year to year. But in USL, you know, when the season ends, those 23 guys are likely to be whittled down to five, and everybody's going to go in different directions. This notion that like a season ends and your teammates break away is a really interesting one to kind of think about. So it'll be nice to see those two guys together, is my point. And you, my friend, are so lucky that you get to see both of them. God willing, this year, should there be a lot of opportunities for you to go in person. I have not had a lot of opportunities to go see soccer in person because Pitt didn't allow press at all this last season. I don't think they're going to allow them in the spring. And we don't know anything about what the USL protocol is going to be. So anyhow, yeah.
Last question that I have, well, I guess the one thing that I will say, Mark, to your point on the relationship and how, you know, different, I think this would be that embrace pregame or after the game, I think would be very different than if Sam Cronin was playing for the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, where I feel like, you know, Mike and like they could get into a shoving match. One of them could yellow card the other could 2 foot scissor tack the other one. And as soon as the whistle's gone off, regardless of the scoreline or the implications or the time of the year, unless it's a playoff game, they'd both be running immediately to each other to hugging, and they'd probably be swapping jerseys. But to your point, Mike, I think we can both agree Michael Azira was one of the most magnanimous, approachable, and friendly guys in that Rapids locker room in 2016 and 2017. I'd be hard pressed to find a Burgundy boy who had any bad things to say about him. So maybe there might not be as much familiarity. Obviously, they were at different points in their careers and in their lives. But I would assume, I would be hard pressed to assume that Dylan Serna had anything but positive things to say about Michael Azira. So maybe a little bit of small talk, you know, certainly a handshake, maybe a hug. You know, maybe the wives end up, you know, crossing paths and, you know, have a little chit chat as well. And then maybe they swap jerseys if that's something. Is that something that happens regularly in the USL, Mark?
I don't think so, because I think you'd have to pay for your jersey. I don't think you get too many of them.
Okay, well, if nothing else, a photo that maybe both Twitter accounts will be able to tweet out, and I'm sure they'll tag the Rapids, and the Rapids will smash the retweet button on that one. So that'll be nice. Last question that I have for you, Mark, the Azira jersey, was it game worn?
I don't know, and I do not care, and I will never. You said that, you know, you were saying before that it's great if you get a Sirner jersey at some point because it'll be the same size as you. I am never going to put on the Azira jersey. I mean, my wife probably won't allow me to hang it anywhere in the house because there's not any places to hang things. I don't have a room to call my own, for, you know, stuff and memorabilia. My rabbinical school ordination certificates are still lying, face down on a pile on a bench in another room because there's just no place to put things. But if I could, I would frame Mike's jersey and put it on the wall. I would never, ever wear it.
We need an HDHL shrine in a corner for that, Mark. So, that's some work that you're going to have to do as far as the, wall interior decoration within House Rabbi. But let's get to the news of the week, or shall I say of the last 24 hours, Mark. The United States Men's National Team, January camp, played a game. It was Sunday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time at the, I think it's Exploria Stadium, home of Orlando City, SC. And they played Trinidad and Tobago, and they defeated them emphatically by a score of 7-0. There were very different circumstances in terms of what these two teams were dealing with from a travel and from a training standpoint. This TNT squad, Mark, was very much a domestic group, so a lot of USL Championship guys, a couple of guys who were, you know, bench players on MLS, and when you compare that to, you know, a pretty bona fide, that starting 11 last night would be a very, very good team in Major League Soccer. So going up against some USL Championships, some USL League One guys, and some guys on the fringe in MLS for Trinidad and Tobago was a little bit difficult. I encourage you all to go listen to the Monday-Sunday night episode of Total Soccer Show, where Joe Lowry kind of broke down the timeline and everything that happened to TNT. But nonetheless, Mark, regardless of the opponent, we had a bunch of young guys. We had a bunch of guys making their debut or their first time getting a start under Greg Berhalter. And in particular, to your point, Mark, where you did some research, when was the last time we had three members of the Colorado Rapids starting for the United States men's national team? Because it happened in this game in the form of Sam Vines in his natural left back role, Kellen Acosta in a midfield three with very much a slightly defensive minded number eight, very similar to his role that he was successful in with the PIDs in 2020. And then Jonathan Lewis starting up top at the left wing position in a 4-3-3. And it was an emphatic 7-0 victory for the Yanks, Mark. We had, two goals from Jonathan Lewis, including one in just the opening couple of minutes in the second minute. Sam Vines had the hockey assist on that one. And then Johnny also got a goal 10 minutes into the second half. Kellen Acosta puts in a good shift. He assisted on Jonathan Lewis's goal. And then Sam Vines also set up Jesus Ferreira, who we'll be talking about later on in this show. We have an Ask HTHL on him. But in any case, Mark, three Rapids players in camp. We wanted to see them do well in camp. That was, I think, for me, vindicated in that the three played well enough to start. All three of them started. All three of them played well, albeit against a weaker opposition, and did good things in the attack that fit in with Greg Berhalter's system and how he wants to play, and also showed some chemistry between the two of them to where it's, you know, okay, if Jonathan Lewis is a backup winger, maybe we really want to consider having Sam Vines there because both of them on the left, they'll have a little bit of chemistry. So, win, 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 win. Everything's coming up Rapids, in the context of this January men's national team camp.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. That's what Matt's singing. Beautiful. Yeah, I have to give props. So Matt threw out there that this was, so two things. Neither of them is a correction. I don't do corrections, Matt. I just kind of educate the peoples in a forward thinking and continuatory, manner from the explicitations that you are, pontificating on. So anyhow, point being, I'm just making up words at this point. Point being one, Matt, it could have been four. It could have been four people because in early, January camp, Cole Bassett was there, and Bassett was not named to the team, for Trinidad and Tobago, so they sent him home. So it could have been, Bassett, Acosta, Vines, and, Johnny Lewis all in the field at the same time. Unfortunately, Bassett wasn't. So, he got sent home, and I'm sure that there's gonna stoke his fire for the next year or two. And I also think, you know, like, it's not over for him. I think if the Olympics is what Greg Berhalter was trying to build a team for, I still think Cole Bassett has a shot based on how he plays in the season. The second thing I was going to say is this, we started to ask the question as soon as we looked on the field, like, three Rapids on the field at the same time. Has that ever happened for the U.S. men's national team? And we started racking our brains and going back, and I did some deep diving into the archives. But before I could pull something out, because I was looking really hard at the 2000 to 2005 matches, I knew there wasn't going to be anything after that, because off the top of my head, I was fairly familiar with the rosters, and I just couldn't think of any point at which three Rapids were on the field. So I looked really closely through 2000 to 2005. There were there was like one game where two guys played at the same time, but even then, it was still like, you know, there was one where Mastroeni started the match and Kyle Beckerman came on for him when they were both with the Rapids. But no, it didn't happen. The only other time we could find where three Rapids were on the field at the same time, and this is from Omar Gonzalez, the Rapids director of communication, is Marcelo Balboa, Matt McKeon, and Paul Bravo at the 1999 Confederations Cup third place match, which is, that is tremendous deep dive. Just knowing that. I also thought this was fascinating, which is the thing that I learned that I did not know before now, which was there was never a game for the U.S. men's national team in which Pablo Mastroeni was on the field at the same time Marcelo Balboa. And there was never a time when there was a game where Balboa and Frazier were on the field together, but never a game where Frazier and Mastroeni were on the field together. So the three of them all took on USMNT games from 2000 to 2005, and yet at no point, only at one point, did two of them ever play in the same game. Otherwise, it was all like, you know, they were on the roster together or they weren't on the roster together. It was possible, though. There was like a brief window in like 2001 where, hypothetically, had they all peaked at the right time, the Rapids could have had not only three players on the field at the same time, it could have been three midfielders, including two defensive midfielders, but it never happened.
I'm surprised, Mark. Did you check, I'm thinking like 2011 January camp after they won the cup in 2010, there wasn't like a friendly against Panama in which it would have been like Jeff Lerwinowitz, Marvell Wynn, I was about to say Kosuke, but that wouldn't have been possible. Who else would have been there? And then maybe Connor or Pablo or something like that.
No, I looked.
I figure because if I had to bet money right now, which I'm not suggesting that I will, that there was a camp that had the most number of current Rapids players in it, it would have to be that January camp right in that period, probably.
So I don't have any I didn't find anything of a January camp list that didn't include that's exclusive of, you know, a game roster. So maybe somebody has that, but like, I don't know that MLS was doing a really good job or keeping archives on players invited to camp who, but the problem that you're bringing up is Mastroeni didn't really, get much playing time with the USMNT after, I think, 2006. We can check that, but he kind of like, I looked it up, he had like 45 caps or 45 roster appearances between 2000 and 2005, and then it kind of drops off significantly. Lerwinowitz, I can't speak to at all. I don't remember seeing his name much at all. And Marvell, I think Marvell got called up for a couple games. I saw the craziest thing is that he got called up for a game against Argentina and played against Messi, which is pretty nuts. That's a fact that I did not know, that Marvell Wynn went toe-to-toe with Lionel Messi at some point. I think the other thing that happened was I didn't realize when Marvell played for the Rapids. I think Marvell didn't make any appearances for the national team while he was with the Rapids. He made all of his appearances slightly before and slightly after. In fact, Mastroeni did too. He appeared a couple times in 2001 when he played for the Miami Fusion, which I had completely forgotten he played for at all.
I'm finding a 2011 January game, Mark, that would have been from that January camp, and the only game that they played was a 1-1 draw against Chile. So maybe I'll look that up. But let's get back to point of order, Mark. Kellen Acosta comes in, puts a really good shift when I think fairly, you know, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, we would have said that his men's national team career was, I don't know if dead on arrival, but certainly on ice, are wondering how does he get back into the squad, given that he was playing okay, hadn't been playing great, hadn't really fit into a role that worked with him with the Rapids to where he was having success, leading to the team having success, and then thus fit in with what Greg Berhalter wanted to do. Played very, very well in 2020, obviously deserve a call-up, and right now I think if Kellen Acosta is going to get back into the national team scene and have any shot at being on the squad for Qatar 2022, it has to come this summer in terms of what he's doing. Right now, for my money mark, he is auditioning to be hamstring insurance for Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams, excuse me, which I don't think is a bad role for him, and it's also a role that he could absolutely fit in. Likewise, I think there's some interesting options there for Sam Vines. Obviously, he'd be competing with some players who are playing abroad in very challenging leagues in Europe, but certainly a backup and, you know, something to think about. And obviously, he'll have a role with the U.S. Olympic squad that could determine, you know, his relevance and where his stock is at. Certainly probably a lot more stable and a lot upward trending relative to GameStop has been the last couple of weeks. And then Jonathan Lewis, where you and I have both been critical of the player that he's been when he hasn't been starting. He hasn't always been consistent and hasn't always had, he's had good opportunities, but hasn't finished them particularly early on in games and starting. We can point to multiple games against Minnesota United, including the final game they played against each other in the regular season, as well as the playoff game, where he had opportunities early on in that game, did not finish. He did not waste that opportunity in the second minute set up by Ferreira from Sam Vines, and then also scored in the 55th minute. And then he goes on to play the full 90 and plays well. So from that context, Mark, I think this is the best 90 minutes that I've seen from Jonathan Lewis. Certainly in the last 12 months, I would go on a stretch to say since possibly Robin Fraser's first game in charge of the Rapids. I believe that was a 2-0 win at RBA where Lewis started, played all 90 minutes and got a brace in that one. So things that we have wanted to see from all three of these players, we saw that we wanted to see that we got from Sam Vines at times, but not throughout the season. Very inconsistently from Jonathan Lewis and very consistently from Kellen Acosta, wanting to see that from a national team standpoint. Kellen Acosta put in a shift, wasn't too flashy, but also did not make any mistakes. And in that, you know, kind of being that number eight defensive minded, your job is to move the ball every single time you have a touch on the ball. It's, oh, that was a nice play, but not necessarily if you're making a big move, that means something broke down defensively or you're doing something in attack that isn't your role. Jonathan Lewis finishing the opportunities that he has and Sam Vines putting in a good shift on the wings. Your thoughts on each of their performances individually and any insight we can glean in terms of their roles for the national team relative to club career and what this means for expectations should we have a normal MLS season in 2021.
I agree with you about Jonathan Lewis in that he took his opportunities. I think the thing that you can't take away from him is that he got on the ball, he dribbled aggressively into positions, and then took on one-on-one situations from the wing that he did very well at and then scored from very, very tight angles. And I think especially the scoring from tight angles or the play in the box was really exceptional. You know, you don't get that many opportunities in the final third. You cannot waste them, and he did not waste them. And he got them early, and that was exceptional. Sam Vines, his ability to put the ball into nearly the perfect position was really great. The thing that was remarkable about Vines in this game, which is interesting when you think about what soccer players are asked to do, especially left backs, is he wasn't asked to defend a whole lot. And so he got to be kind of the catalyst and the point guard on the offense a lot, which I think is a challenge for him with the Rapids in that they will often face a team where possession is more 50-50 or 55-45 for the other team. And so his responsibility is more defensive. You know, sometimes he has to flip that switch in his brain where he's the quarterback off. And for Kellen Acosta, I think he just looked really, really confident and really strong on the ball. I'm going to slow our roll a lot, though, in this one big thing, which is to say, and Matt's very excited and I love Matt and that's really important. He's a puppy dog wagging his tail for the men's national team. But we got to slow our roll twofold here. One, this was a bad Trinidad and Tobago team. And two, this was a bad Trinidad and Tobago team who, as the commentators kind of mentioned, especially John Strong, who have had almost no opportunity to train together. They're in a very bad rebuilding phase, and they've had really big challenges getting together through COVID. I think the smaller, more financially struggling CONCACAF teams were hit harder by COVID than the big American teams, where, you know, they can have a bubble tournament in Florida and all this stuff, whereas the other teams, you know, couldn't. It was a little bit strange to me also that they brought a lot of players from the Trinidad League, and a few players who were like USL or even USL unattached players. But they couldn't really, I mean, this wasn't even Trinidad and Tobago's strongest team. I mean, you know, their best player is Kevin Molino. Their best goalkeeper is Greg Ranjit Singh, and neither of them were called up to play. Molino, I'm sure the reason was, the COVID protocols would have made it difficult. Ranjit Singh, I think they're trying to find a new guy for, to take over for him. He's a goalkeeper, who played USL, and he's played for, MLS. But anyways, long story short, this was a bad team. And it's really hard to take a lot away from, for the U.S. when they played a team this bad. I mean, you know, if we pretended like this was Bermuda or American Samoa or Taiwan or, you know, Afghanistan, some other really small, really low rated ELO, rating, FIFA team, we would have expected the U.S. to win 10 to nothing, and anything short of that, like a 7 to nothing win, which was nearly a 7 to 1 win, is almost a disappointment. So, I think what this says, to answer your last question, right? I think what this says for John Lewis is he is still what he has always been for both the Rapids, for who he was for NYCFC, although his role will probably grow for the Rapids, and is still for the USMNT, which is he's a 75th minute off the bench option who gives you incredible speed, and really, really good, attacking, possibility from both sides is the other thing. You probably noticed he got a lot of excitement going early in the game from the left, and then Berhalter had him switch over to the right at some point, and he played as a right attacking wing, and he looked great over there too. And I think that that's really, really, an important thing to kind of also bring up about Lewis.
Well said there, Mark. I guess the one thing, I agree with you regarding Jonathan Lewis, and I absolutely echo your point that we should certainly consider this. I guess the key thing that I was looking at is I just wanted to see Kellen Acosta get in a game with the national team and have a performance that he could feel good about, regardless of the opponent or the result. Jonathan Lewis scoring 2 goals and putting in a solid shift through 90 minutes and getting to play regularly where he's coming back to Colorado and we're uncertain when the season is going to start. Is there going to be a lockout such that we're not sure whether or not, whether or not preseason is going to kick off officially on February 22nd, to get a good solid months of work in front of a coach and a coaching staff that matters, that can critique him properly, where they see him having a similar role tactically to what he has with his club team, and then get 2 goals that he can feel good about. He has confidence. Now I want to see him actually build on that. So to that point, Mark, you know, we had, when we did right around this time last year and we did our season preview of the Rapids, we had an episode, where we asked 11 questions to define the Colorado Rapids 2020 season. That quickly blew up because of the pandemic. But one of the questions you might remember, Mark, is will the real Kellen Acosta please stand up? Who is he as a player? Is he, you know, just a guy in MLS? Is he indicative of the homegrown talent that was hyped about him when he signed as a teenager with FC Dallas? Is this a guy who realistically can get back into the national team picture? And while the role that he ultimately settled into wasn't something we necessarily expected, we would have wanted to see him, you know, I guess based on the trade, I would have expected him to be in what ended up being Cole Bassett's role in the 4-3-3, and then Bassett to be more of the number 8 alongside him between him and Captain Jack Price. But nonetheless, it's a role that fits Keelan Acosta, that he plays really well, that he plays at a high level. When he has a big performance, he has some really good flashy moments in pressure, defensively and offensively. And ultimately, he is a functioning cog in a machine where he does a lot of things really, really well. And he does two or three things at a very, very high level for an MLS level. And that's not too far apart in terms of style and build of player to what we've seen from Weston McKennie or Tyler Adams, either for their club teams in that role, other than the, oh, Tyler Adams is a right back in defense and then moves into the midfield and attack. I'm not suggesting that Kellen Acosta should be a right back for the Rapids. Keegan Rosenberry has that settled in. But simply that, that the roles are very similar, and he proved in 2020. He stood up in 2020 and said, I'm Kellen Acosta. This is who I am. I can play well. Don't y'all forget about me. To the point where he earned a national team call-up. I don't know that I still feel like Jonathan Lewis got this call-up mostly because of potential rather than what his performance and the results were from his play in 2020. So to that point, Kellen Acosta showed he arrived from a club perspective in 2020. Now he needs to arrive from a national team perspective in 2021. And if he does that, he should be on the 35-man preliminary squad for the 2022 Qatar World Cup in, you know, a year's time this coming November or December, assuming that the national team gets there, barring games against, I don't know, teams like Trinidad and Tobago. But I don't know that we've seen that from Jonathan Lewis. For Jonathan Lewis to have that same chance of being on the squad for the 2022 World Cup, he is going to have to arrive both at the club level and at the national team level in 2021. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I am waiting with bated breath to see what that looks like, because we've still seen a player who consistently has not been able to finish games out 90 minutes, will fade in and out of games, especially if he starts, and is an extremely effective substitute. Is a guy who is a great option off the bench for a mid-table team in MLS for 15 to 20 minutes. Is he capable of being that Christian Pulisic understudy guy to come off the bench in a World Cup qualifier at the Azteca in Mexico or in a must-win game in a major tournament? I don't have the answer to that, Mark, but I could point to a bunch of other guys who aren't able to start for their club team in MLS. That club team is not expected to compete for a major trophy, who would not be under consideration for Greg Berhalter, given the plethora of talent that is Johnny's age or younger and playing and starting in much bigger leagues and in much bigger competition at much bigger clubs. Mark, I guess I'll throw it to you in that point. What does, from a national team perspective, what does success look like for these three Burgundy USMNT players?
Well, I have low expectations, to be honest, because I think that, like I said, Berhalter's trying to build a team for the Olympics, which means he's trying to take, you know, three over 23 players and a bunch of under 23 players, which Jonathan Lewis would still qualify and Sam Vines would definitely still qualify. Right? Jonathan Lewis is still like 21, yeah?
He'll be 24 in June, but it would have been any player who was not 23 January 1st of last year. So, Vines, Lewis, and Bassett are all eligible based on the adjusted rule.
Right. And the question is, like, whether Acosta is going to go as, you know, kind of the veteran guy who holds it down, but also, like, is, I wouldn't say expendable, but, like, you don't really, do you really want to put your three best players in the world on the field plus the U23s for the Olympics? I mean, depends on what they're trying to accomplish. If they really, really want a gold medal, or if they're kind of like trying to develop a team and build camaraderie. Because, you know, I don't think, Matt, you or I would think that Kellen Acosta is one of the 11 best players the U.S. has, if you took all the European players out of the rotation. So, but anyway, so I think for Kellen Acosta, it's to just keep getting little invites, and looks here and there to kind of like be on the radar for a Gold Cup or be in the mix for some qualifiers. But I don't think, you know, I don't think even Kellen Acosta thinks there's a very good chance that he's going to be into the World Cup. I think he's a guy who's like at the far end of the lineup. If you need to, Sam Vines, is the kind of other end of the spectrum in the sense that, like, I don't know how many options the USMNT has at left back. It's not a deep pool. Sam Vines is very good and he could very easily be the backup left back for the U.S. team, or even soon within the next 2 years, the starting left back for the U.S. team for the foreseeable future. And Jonathan Lewis kind of profiles pretty much somewhere in the middle, which is like he may grow as a player into a kind of a DeAndre Yedlin English Premier League level, you know, wide player, because his speed is so good. And if his other skills and his kind of off the ball acumen develop, then there's no telling what the guy can do. But also, you know, we've kind of been talking about Jonathan Lewis in these lofty, you know, he's got a lot of potential for a long time. And that's not damning him at all. You know, I think you and I just both have listened to the Freddie Adu podcast. And I think one of the challenges of what we learned about in Grant Wall's reporting on Freddie Adu was he was hamstrung by lofty and ridiculous expectations. You know, Wall mentions that Darren Revelle anointed him a failure at the age of 17. You know, you can't anoint a player a failure really ever. I mean, but realistically, like if you have hype on a guy and he hasn't really fulfilled what you were hoping for him by 26, you wouldn't call him a failure, but you'd say like he, you know, we had bigger expectations than he quite achieved. But you know, he's still, Jonathan Lewis still has years and years to go before we can say, he is no longer growing as a player, or he is what he is as a good 75th minute off the bench option.
Yeah, no, I guess the few things that I'll add there, Mark, I think so for success for Kellen Acosta, I think he needs to get called up to the Gold Cup. And I don't know if he'll start given Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, maybe a Gio Reyna at that point, but he needs to look the part in camp with that to the point where he is in the mix for World Cup qualifier. Cause that's where, especially with the way the calendar's looking like, there's some of those windows, Mark, where they're playing 3 games in 8 days. And if you're counting, you know, coming across the pond for a lot of the other midfielders, that's where, you know, hey, Kellen, can you start and play a full 90 minutes and get us a draw at Honduras? Can you come off the bench and see out a game in a close, you know, where we're up one goal, you know, in the 65th minute against Costa Rica? And those are the kinds of performances where you can continue to build up, you know, both a reputation, a sense of trust with the coach to the point where you're in the camp. I agree with you, Mark. I don't think Kellen Acosta at this point, like, massive things will have to happen for him to be the expected starter going into a World Cup in 2 years' time. But I think certainly he can do enough in this upcoming Gold Cup, off the bench, starting and then being subbed off, in camp, in training, to the point where he's in the mix for the World Cup qualifiers, and then little performances there, I think, ultimately get you into the squad, because then he knows, okay, if anything happens to Weston McKennie, I can plug in Kellen, and I know that he's going to be able to do a job. There is no concern there. In the same way, Mark, you know, I'd throw in, you know, who would be a good example of this? I would say, you know, like Dax McCarty for Michael Bradley in previous years would be another good example of that. I think for Sam Vines, and I'd say for Cole Bassett as well, get called up for Olympic qualifying, qualify for the Olympic team, get on the Olympic team, start, play regularly and ball out, hopefully get out of the group. I don't know whether or not I'd expect the U.S. to medal. We haven't seen what the rest of the pool is going to look like and the rosters there, Mark, but certainly have a good showing in the way that the Olympic team historically has not been very successful for the United States men's national team. I think the situation for Jonathan Lewis is a little bit more interesting, Mark, because if he decides, hey, I want to go to the Olympics, I think he's a de facto starter for Jason Christ. If he decides to come into the Gold Cup, there's Christian Pulisic, there's Timothy Weah potentially, there's that kid whose name I can't remember pronounced from Valencia as well, who's kind of a tweener in the front three in a 4-3-3, where, you know, does he want to be in camp to the point where he's playing and it's like, okay, Johnny, you're good enough to where, similar to with Kellen, to Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, you are at a good enough level to where I can trust you if we need to give Christian a night off or have him only play 65 minutes. I don't know which is better for him. I would expect, given how meticulous Greg Berhalter is, that that conversation will be had before a decision is made. And I look forward to in the first media availability with Johnny this year, asking him what he thinks success looks like. And if it's the Olympics, okay, go make it 3 Rapids players to the Olympics and crush it. And if it's with the Gold Cup, then it'll be hopefully 2 on the field coming off the bench in the 70th minute in a semifinal against Costa Rica in the form of him and Kellen Acosta trying to see out the game. I do have one thing to add here, Mark. Correct me if I'm wrong. The stat that you pulled up from the Confederations Cup was Rapids players starting for the men's national team, correct?
I don't know. I actually don't. I was looking even for players who had played. I did find, I think, one example of three Rapids on a roster together, but I think one of those included a Rapids player who sat on the bench for the whole game. So, I can't actually confirm or deny that. You'd have to ask Omar Gonzalez.
Okay. Well, I have a stat then maybe I'd want to follow up with him just to confirm, that January camp following the 2010 MLS Cup championship for the Rapids, Mark, on January 22nd, 2011, they played Chile in Carson, California. I think it would have still been the Home Depot Center at that point. And, you only had one starter, in Jeff Lorenowitz. He started and played the full 90 minutes, but then Marvell Wynn came on for Omar Gonzalez in the 46th minute. And then Anthony Wallace, Wally, subbed on for Zach Lloyd, then of FC Dallas, in the 73rd minute. So for that final, what would have been 17 minutes plus stoppage time, you would have had three Rapids players, three players who were starters for the Rapids who played in MLS Cup on the field at the same time. But obviously you would have only had one starter in Big Red and probably would have been the most formidable, defensive midfield pairing in, USMNT history, Mark, because he would have been playing next to then captain of the men's national team, Dax McCarty, also of FC Dallas, who played against the Rapids in that final. Small, small world. And that was a 1-1 draw, Mark, against Chile. Teal Bunbury had the one goal for the USMNT off of a penalty.
What year was that?
This would have been January 22nd, 2011.
Wow, I can't believe Anthony Wallace got a USMNT call-up.
It was his one cap. His one cap was in that game. But let's get to the SKHTHL we have tonight, Mark, that is very topical given our recent discussions about Rapid strikers and players and everything. And then also in the context of last night's USMNT game, as we mentioned, Jesus Ferreira getting involved both for the Rapids and scoring a few goals himself. So we have an SKHTHL from Jody Robbins. Hi, Jody. It's been a while. Happy New Year. Nice to hear from you. At Rapids 96 podcast, hashtag AskHTHL. Not a question, but a proposition. The Rapids should acquire Jesus Ferreira. He doesn't consistently start or produce for Dallas. He seems to play well as a false nine, while is similar to what Frazier wants. His chemistry with Lewis and Vines. Discuss. Jesus Ferreira, Mark, signed with FC Dallas in 2017. At that point, he was the youngest signing in club history. Don't know if that's been broken, given how many homegrowns the Rapids, or excuse me, FC Dallas has signed in that time. Interesting enough, Mark, he is the son of former MLS MVP David Ferreira, who won his MVP in 2010 and played against the Colorado Rapids in that final for FC Dallas. And he really is only, he got one start or one appearance in 2018 and 2017. And then he started 29 games in a full season in 2019, 8 goals, 6 assists for him. And then last year, kind of a rough year, he started 13, played 19 of the 22 games, question mark, that FC Dallas would have played, having just one goal and one assist, Mark, and only played 979 minutes. And then if I look at his game log, he does not play 90 minutes at any point, Mark. So often for Luigi Gonzalez, he was the first attacking sub. He was the first player attacking-wise to get subbed off for FC Dallas. And then when he was subbing in, anywhere from 25 to about 15 minutes left. So a young, interesting player, Mark. A player who right now is listed at 5'8 and 140 pounds. Granted, that might have been when he signed for FC Dallas as a 16-year-old, so who knows if he's had any late growth spurt. Has done some false 90 things for FC Dallas. Has played on the wing as an attacking midfielder. The other wing has played as a center forward alongside Pepe, their other exciting young homegrown, who I think scored that goal against Portland in the playoffs for FC Dallas. And then just in, at the end of 2019, Mark signed a, contract extension for 4 years, on TAM money. So we don't know yet what he's making now under the current CBA, because we don't have the 2020 numbers. He was making the standard homegrown 70-75K, for FC Dallas under his original homegrown deal, Mark. An exciting young player, one who clearly has some interest from the national team. But if I look at what he's doing from a national team standpoint, Jody, it's a little bit different from what he's been with FC Dallas, just because he's been all over the field. He'll play wide and then move in central. He'll sub on. He'll be subbed off and everything. He doesn't really have a defined position. He's good at a lot of things, but at least for Luchi Gonzalez, doesn't appear to be great as anything. Whereas I saw Mark, a false nine who could do some traditional number 90 things, holding up the ball. He ate Trinidad and Tobago's lunch in zone 14. Last night, and then it's some really good hold up play and then also some layoff and really decent stuff that we haven't necessarily seen, possibly by design rather than lack of ability, from Diego Rubio, who's a little bit more withdrawn, won't be that guy who's immediately in the box, you know, right around the penalty circle or in the 6-yard box trying to actually be the, final touch on the ball, where certainly he's been that sometimes with FC Dallas and was very much that for the U.S. men's national team as the target striker. And if he doesn't get anything, lay it off to somebody else in the area. That part is something Diego Rubio's good at. Andre Shinyashiki can do is something that would fit in, with the Colorado Rapids system in general. Mark, is this something that's remotely reasonable? If you were Luchi Gonzalez and Porik Smith calls you, are you even picking up the phone on this one?
Yeah, not enough data. I mean, you answered it better than I can answer it, honestly. The first time I ever saw and noticed the kid was in a playoff game against Seattle, I think, this last year. And I've been trying to look up the stats and they're hard to actually find. But, you know, he's played in spurts. You're right. You know, he had a lot of starts down the, stretch. He's still a young guy. As you pointed out, he's only 20 years old and he just turned 20. And I think, that leads me to a couple of conclusions. One, Dallas is still kind of using him and growing with him. Two, the other thing that we've learned from the Brian Reynolds sale that just happened, went through just today, to Roma, I think, is that, you know, Dallas are, developing a ton of kids out of their academy and they're selling them to Europe for a lot of money. And the idea that they would take a player who maybe isn't getting on the field as much as they'd like, or maybe hasn't fulfilled the development curve of their Paxton Pomacals and their Brian Reynoldses, and their Reggie Cannons. But you know, like, that's a guy you probably want to hold for at least a year or two. Because the idea that you trade him to the Rapids or sell him to the Rapids, even for, like, let's say $1 million transfer fee or $1 million in GAM and TAM and international slot and next year's super draft pick, you know, the financial equivalent thereof, you know, if the Rapids then have a great year with Ferreira and then sell him to the Portuguese league for $3 million or $5 million or something, that's just cash that Dallas doesn't pocket and it doesn't look good for them. So there's no, unless they get a really good, what's called the sell on, kind of clause, which anyone who's ever played FIFA or, Football Manager knows about that, where you can make a deal where, you know, if the Rapids sell them on, that Dallas would get 50% of the profit or whatever. It strikes me as, a really wishful move. That being said, Jody, I think your point that you make really well here is, you know, the Rapids kind of fleeced NYCFC out of this exact situation. They had an underused, highly talented U.S. men's national team level winger, and the Rapids made him an offer, and it happened. I don't know if the Rapids are currently in a mode where they're stockpiling young talent. I actually think they've probably got all the young talent they want to deal with right now. What Colorado probably wants to be accentuating is to grab a few more grizzled veterans or a few more role players in specific positions who can do a job. The big position that we are trying to figure out, maybe a veteran striker who can, not necessarily play 90 minutes, 34 games a year, but can come in either off the bench or play 5 or 10 games and, you know, do a job and really show younger players how to play the center forward role. And Ferreira doesn't fit that mold.
I agree with you there, Mark. I think if there's one thing, like we talked about, there's a lot of similarities between what Ferreira's done for FC Dallas to What he's done with the national team and what he do for the Rapids. In terms of the role that he's had at the club level, he's almost similar to Shinyashiki than he is to Rubio. But to, you know, your point, I guess the one thing, while he's able to do a lot of traditional number 90 things that we haven't seen Diego Rubio do for various reasons that might not be a reflection of his ability or lack thereof to do them, the fact is he's listed at 5'8". Diego Rubio's listed at 5'10". I don't remember offhand how tall Shinyashiki is, but he's not over 6 foot. So to your point of the one thing the Rapids don't have a player in their striker pool who can really do right now is just stand up in between the center backs, win balls in the air, just try and head things home off of corners and off of crosses. And that's the one thing that in, Ferreira's number 9 toolkit that we've seen so far that he also doesn't have because he's 5'8", Mark. There's a reason Keegan Rosenberry doesn't have 5 thumping header goals for the Colorado Rapids so far. And so that would be kind of my concern from a stylistic standpoint. I also wonder whether or not he would actually start on a regular basis because he hasn't been a regular starter, you know. So from his standpoint, you know, he grew up in Dallas because his dad was playing there when he was a kid. He started here, obviously has a relationship and, you know, is at a club that trusts young players and gave him this opportunity. I would want to see, if I were Ferreira or his representation, I would want to know what role did the Colorado Rapids see for him and is it different or more prominent than what he's gotten from FC Dallas. So that's kind of the first question that I have. To your point, Mark, about, you know, if the Brian Reynolds move to AS Roma really works out, they are one more big signing to a European club. And it doesn't even have to be like a Champions League club. This could be like Paxton Pomykal to an upper mid-table Eredivisie club, like going to like FC Utrecht or AZ. It doesn't have to be PSV Eindhoven or Ajax, for example. And if that trade ends up working out, and then even just if Brian Reynolds or, not Brian Reynolds, Reggie Cannon is a functional player in Portugal, then you're at the point where you're almost approaching FC Dallas is the Southampton of Major League Soccer, to where as soon as a club from Europe comes calling for any of their homegrowns who's a teenager or under 22 years old, then immediately that price goes up. So I don't know how FC Dallas Jesus Ferreira. I don't know if they see him as another one of those guys who they could sell for several million dollars to Europe. Maybe he's a guy who they see and it's like, oh, we'll hang on to him and he's a functional MS guy. And maybe his ceiling is, you know, an average Yossi Zardes season for the LA Galaxy or Columbus Crew. And maybe his floor is, you know, Dominic Baggi. And that wouldn't necessarily be a bad outcome. But if you're just holding out long enough for Pomykal to get sold by, this summer or in a year's time, next summer, for example, and he gets sold for a bunch of money and then that becomes a big option, then immediately anybody who's looking for a striker, looking for a young guy from MLS, Ferreira's price automatically goes up because of the pedigree and the precedent set by the FC Dallas Academy. And so in that point, Mark, I don't know that this is a stock necessarily that FC Dallas might want to sell on. If they do, I would expect them to want to have a some form of, not a buyback clause, a profit sharing of the transfer fee, a cut of, you know, 50% ownership or 25%. I think they had a similar thing with Kellen Acosta that has since expired as well. I think the one thing that maybe the Rapids would have going for them if they were interested, Mark, Porrick Smith has now developed a really good history of buying young, depressed assets and then also paying value for them. It was almost $1 million for them to get Jonathan Lewis. It was over $500,000 in total assets for Lalas Abubakar. So if you're a team who's like, eh, we've got this young guy, we kind of rate him, but, you know, if we have a chance to cash in on him right now, given we're not really sure about what he's going to pan out on, if we can cash in for top domestic value for him, that would be an opportunity. If there's one team who'd be willing to pursue that and to have it make sense financially for the selling club and then also provide an opportunity for that young player, it would be the Colorado Rapids. My question would be, how would they rate him? What role would he have to the point where they'd convince Jesus to want to come to Colorado and leave the family atmosphere at FC Dallas? And is that, you know, in conjunction with how FC Dallas rates Ferreira, or they want to hold on to that stock, you know, hashtag diamond emoji, if I'm making another Wall Street Bets Reddit analogy, hold on to that and see what happens. If for no other reason, they sell one other big guy and immediately Ferreira, by association, his price would double in value overnight because he's an FC Dallas Academy kid playing regularly in MLS. But I'd want to see more production from him. You know, I'd want to see a 34 game season, you know, where he gets like 12 goals, 8 assists or something closer to 2019 than very much the step back that he had in 2020. Mark, tell our listeners about our sponsors.
Icarus F-Ski, FCF-Ski. FC, if you wanted a ski parka that looked like a soccer jersey, they could make that for you. It'd be a custom-made kit. You can pick your colors, you can pick your sizes, you can do it for your bowling league, whatever you like. Icarus FC. F-Ski again, Matt, what's going on here? We'll make custom-made kits just for you. Additionally, you can patronize our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves. Purveyors and makers of fantastic custom warming of the neck gear. Do it for your friends and your family. It's a great opportunity. They also sell masks, Roughneck Scarves. They are the official scarf company of a number of major supporters groups around the country. So if you are thinking of starting a rogue supporting group for whatever USL or NISA team that you are planning on supporting. Matt, there's a new team that just got announced today, Monterey Bay FC, which is going to be playing in 2022 in USL. Maybe you want to start a supporters group for the Monterey Bay Aquarium Heads or something like that. You need to get a scarf. That's the first rule of supporters clubs. And that would be Roughneck Scarves. They're the place to do it. Matt, tell them where to read about us, write about us, talk to us, and text message us.
Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi and at @LWSMattPollard. Subscribe to our Substack newsletter at holdingthehighline.substack.com, all lowercase, all one word in the case of holding the high line. Or I say no spaces between the HTHLs. Follow us, the podcast, on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL, just like Jody did, and we'll answer it live on the podcast. If you want to get in touch in long form, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe, unsubscribe, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Holding the High Line and you'll find us. I've got a link in the show notes regularly that shows a whole Twitter thread of all the places that we've been added. And if we're not somewhere that you would want us to be, let us know via Twitter or via email, and we'll do our best to get on there to make ourselves more convenient and easier for you to find. If we bring further monetary value to your lives, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast, or denverpost.com/HTHL for a really great deal on the Denver Post sports digital content. Listeners, we will see you next time.
Peace.